On the podcast today, we are going to dissect chapter 47 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 47th episode of the 81 meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
Without going outside, you may know the whole world. Without looking through the window, you may see the ways of heaven. The farther you go, the less you know. Thus, the wise know without traveling. See without looking, work without doing.
Without going out the door, know the world. Without peering out the window, see the heavenly Tao. The further one goes, the less one knows. Therefore, the sage knows without going, names without seeing, achieves without striving. So this chapter speaks about how the small picture and the big picture are the same picture in relation to human beings and the greater universe and Tao in its totality. And so in this chapter, it's pointing to the principle in Taoism of Li, of organic pattern from the cosmic level all the way down into our nerve fibers and down to the most minute aspects of life that we find. There is this relationship between the macrocosm and the microcosm.
Yes. Yeah, that's the core message of this chapter, microcosm and macrocosm concept. And that Li aspect, as you mentioned, is actually highly dealt with it a lot in the Neo-Confucianism philosophy. And the Neo-Confucian scholars understood that the Lao Tzu's teaching in this context was like a heart is the Li. So organic pattern of the universe. So that universe is indeed my heart, and my heart is the universe. So from that perspective, heart is the Li. Thus you will understand the nature of universe when you understand your own heart. Because that Li is spread through the universe, is within all of us as well. So if you understand that, you will be able to understand the order of the universe.
Yes. So in the chapter, they're speaking about how people who follow the Tao are focusing on their heart, focusing on the internal world, their own Li, as opposed to being driven by external events, external pleasures, etc. And so you have this focus on the inner world. And in this chapter, it does mention that you don't need to travel, right? And so Lao Tzu's not saying that traveling is a negative thing. He's saying that you don't need to go anywhere to understand the Tao, actually. You don't need to go on a great pilgrimage. You don't need to go to the moon, to Mars, or where have you, to understand the nature of the Tao, because the Tao moves through you.
Yes.
You're an aspect of the universe. You're actually an aperture of the Tao to express itself. The problem is our own subjectivity, our own ego, eclipses that divine power that moves through us. And so we sort of block the dam of the river, which then affects our own expression, our own Li. Because our expression, we think, is driven by external circumstances, right? So in this chapter, Lao Tzu is saying that we already have everything. We don't need anything else. We don't need to get anything from the external world. And so what do we see in the modern world, which is mainly driven by materialism? We see people adding things to themselves, right? They might get a load of tattoos, or they might get a bunch of piercings, or this and that. And then, look, there's nothing wrong with that per se. But that still can never define who you are deep down.
Yes.
It's just ink on skin. And it may have some meaning to you, for sure. But it still can't define the Tao, because you already were born with everything that you have. The world teaches us that we don't have any power, that we have nothing, that we are Tao-less. But we are full of Tao, and that's what Lao Tzu is saying. We can find that, but we have to reorient our awareness back within ourselves, and we shouldn't be driven by the external world.
I think it has to be a clear understanding between inner and the outer world. And I think outer world is only a reflection of our own inner world. And if you understand that thoroughly, you won't search for things outside anymore. You're just acknowledging the outer world, the material world exists in a way. That instead of identifying outer world as if that is yourself, like as you mentioned with the old outer expressions on their skin and whatnot, that doesn't define the who you truly are inside deeply. So that's so if you understand what outer world represents, then you will stop searching for something outside. But at the same time, when you do understand what outer world represents, then anything that you do externally will just be a reflection of your inner world. Yep. For example, you mentioned pilgrimage earlier. Again, pilgrimage can mean a lot of things depends on the individual level. But if you're searching for some sort of magical experience through the journey, maybe there's a little bit of mistaken thoughts there, I think. But if you are doing the pilgrimage in a sense that you are going through the journey inwardly, through the outer journey, outer world, then you might have a better understanding from inside. It's more like a profound insights will come to you through the journey.
Yes. And pilgrimage, good example, because if we look at particularly Westerners, when they think of a pilgrimage, they think that they will attain something at the end of the pilgrimage. But the process of the pilgrimage is what is important. And that's a little bit what Lao Tzu's saying as well. Like, there's nothing wrong with pilgrimage per se. But if you're expecting to get something from it without having found it beforehand, then that's where there is a mistake, right? There is a bit of a mistake there. Like, if we look at some of the great Hindu pilgrimages, particularly up in the north, where Hindus will, it's important for them to go on these pilgrimages. But the thing is that most of them are already connected to the tradition and to Shiva already. So the pilgrimage is more of an appreciation of the ultimate. It's more of like centering one's mind on the ultimate. It's more of a tool than it is something that you're going to get from this, right? Obviously, we do get certain attainments and we have certain epiphanies, and that when we go on a pilgrimage, there's no denying that. But if you think that you're going to be absorbed in the Tao or Brahman, to use Sanskrit Hindu terminology, then that's where the mistake is. Because it's the journey itself that is the destination. It's not the destination is not, you won't get anything from that if you go on these on a pilgrimage, for example. But pilgrimages are important because of that fact of using it as a spiritual tool to keep your mind centered on the path, right? And to use the path analogy, the Tao, right? And following the Tao, you let your life become absorbed on the pilgrimage, but you're experiencing things that you wouldn't experience ordinarily. And so it's important how you deal with that, right? Because each and every situation is different.
That's right.
But if you're holding on to an ego, you'll come across a lot of obstacles. If, as Lao Tzu is pointing out in this chapter, if you are moving effortless through life, then you will be able to encounter these situations in an immediate and appropriate manner.
That's right. And when you expect something from the journey, like pilgrimage, that is already your ego is speaking to you, mm-hmm. as if like you want some sort of special experience. But again, that experience you may have through the journey, but we need to remind ourselves that those experiences are all going to be just momentarily as well. It's a very temporary experience. And that experience only to teach us to have as a reminder, and also how to carry that sort of feeling and awareness throughout your daily life. That's what it should teach you, instead of you are expecting something from the experience, or you expecting to have some magical experience, or people have this amazing idea of enlightenment, right?
Yeah.
And they're expecting something like that. But again, how many times do we observe the people who do have that kind of expectation, and when they actually do go on a journey, a lot of people like, this is it. They seem to be a bit disappointed. But again, it's not about expecting something. It's about take the experience and what you see as truly what they are, and you need to understand they are they're only for us to remind us. It's not to impress us.
No. It's just as meditation, right? When Shunro Suzuki said to all the Americans, when they wanted to attain something or get something from the meditation, he said, meditation is about nothing. It's you're not going to get anything. The reason you meditate is because this is what Buddhas do. And so likewise with pilgrimage, this is what Tao does. Mm. You go on pilgrimage because this is what Tao does. Mm. It's an appreciation and an acknowledgement of the ultimate reality that is at the heart of our existence. It's got nothing to do about attaining something, because when we start to talk about it, when we start to talk about attaining or getting something, usually it's egocentric. Mm. When we go, sometimes when we selflessly go on these journeys, we just allow the process to unfold. Mm. And so if you never want to have a dull pilgrimage, then do the pilgrimages in India, because there's never a dull moment. Mm. Maybe, you know, in some Western countries, the pilgrimage can be fairly dull, but if you want a pilgrimage that is centered on the ultimate, then India is one of the perfect places. Mm. But again, getting back to what I was saying, that this is sort of just what the Tao does. You shouldn't approach it with a perspective of I want to get something from this, because this has become part of sort of this individualistic culture that a lot of the world is being driven into. It's like, what's in it for me? And it's like, well, if you're interested in Eastern spirituality, particularly Taoism, there's nothing really in it for you. Because it's not like a self-help program. This is about a subtraction of your life. It's what this chapter is about, right? Subtracting things from your life. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of adding things to your life, it's about knowing less than knowing more. Mm-hmm. And so if you want a self-help program or something like this, or something to do with self-improvement, then you need to look elsewhere.
Yes.
Because Taoism is not about that. Hinduism is not about that. Mm. Buddhism is not about that. The Eastern spiritual traditions are about understanding your true nature. It's got nothing to do with whether you're going to be good at this or that. It's about understanding the heart, as you mentioned earlier, the heart of your existence, which is a reflection of the ultimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you're saying kind of remind me of this quote that I found in Bhagavad Gita, saying, all actions take place in time by interweaving of the forces of nature. But the man lost in selfish delusion thinks that he himself is the actor.
Exactly. It's not. So again, like looking at from a Zhuangzi perspective, we all have these roles, and then we attach to the role and we think we are the one running the show.
Mm.
And we're not running the show. There's a greater energy that's moving through us, but we get caught up in our own subjectivity, like what the Bhagavad Gita said, and we think that we're actually running the show. And we control, really, from a free will perspective, a small bandwidth of our life.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You can know when you're going to go to the shower, for example, right? Simple things like that. Oh, I'm going to cook now, so you can make a decision on that. But when it comes to the unexpected situations in life, you have no control over that at all. And they're 98% of the time, it's like that.
Yeah.
And so this is where Uwei becomes an important factor in Taoist cultivation and spiritual cultivation in general, where about allowing the world to kind of just run its course.
Yes.
And understand that this actor is an actor. That's it. You're employed as a social member of the society.
That's right.
And that's what you are. You play your role, you do your thing. But if you forget the ultimate being behind the mask, that is what it mentions in this chapter about getting further and further away from the Tao.
Mm.
You're getting further and further away from the heart, as you mentioned.
Mm.
And you're painting the mask, you're doing all sorts of things. You think that this mask is who you are, and it can never be who you are.
Yes. The more we're trying to control certain things, harder it becomes, I think, because you're always going to meet more conflict.
Yep.
You're almost not letting interweaving of the forces of nature. You are interfering.
Yes, exactly.
With the forces of nature, right? Yep. So that's when we trying to push certain things that are not supposed to be pushed, or control in a certain way because of your own personal reason and whatnot, instead of allowing it to be whatever it will.
Yeah.
But if you can allow it to be whatever it will, it again, like we talked about this many times, it will always work it out as it should without anyone's interference. And that is the nature's way, that is the Tao.
That's right. That's Wu Wei. And a lot of people, when we speak like this on the podcast, particularly and on my other videos about Taoism and Wu Wei, a lot of people say, yeah, but what about this situation, that situation? What about my life circumstances like this and that? And look, the Tao does not discriminate. It loves and nourishes all, but it doesn't lord it over us. We've all been given different life situations. And in Taoism, the biggest negative you could do is complain about your life situation, be negative about it, play the victim. These sorts of things are not going to help you progress in your life, right? So what you have to accept is that all of our life situations are different, but we've all been given an equal distribution, the energy of the Tao within us. That's what this chapter is saying, right? Mm. You don't have to go anywhere to understand that, right? So you can have a terrible life situation, but you can understand the nature of the universe, right? So we can all find the Tao in our own lives when we begin to simplify our mind, when we begin to simplify our life, and when we begin to stop complaining about the circumstances that we've been dealt and accept the hand that we've been given, and then we can move on with our life, right, on an individual level. Mm. But we've got to sort of let go of ourselves. And it's interesting because in let going of ourselves, then we don't have an urge to interfere in other people's lives. We don't have an urge to interfere in another country's dilemma or so forth and so on, right? And isn't it interesting that if we didn't follow the path of interference, there would be no violence, there would be no conflict in the world at all. We would all operate from a perspective of mutual respect. And that's where a lot of people get wrong about Taoism. They think that, oh, you're just heartless, you're just not doing this and that. And it's like, no, we're following the principles of Wu Wei, of non-interference, of effortless living. And in understanding that, we can allow people and groups of people, etc., to follow their own li, follow their own life path, and we're all good. Mm. We're happy. Mm. We're not trying to stand out. We're not trying to add things to our life to look a certain way. We're subtracting things from our life because it's in subtracting everything from your life that you become in alignment with the Tao. Mm. And there's a great peace and equanimity there, which is underrated in the world these days, because we live in a time where we should add things to our life, we should stand out, we should be somebody. And this is the complete opposite way of thinking to Lao Tzu, because Lao Tzu is saying, reorient your awareness within. It doesn't matter who you are in society. Look, if you are a king, that's all well and good. But if you don't follow the principles of Wu Wei, if you don't follow the principles of non-interference, what's the chances that the people will trust the leader?
Mm.
They won't trust, because he's always interfering in people's affairs. And so that's the same for us on an individual level. If you have a friend that's always interfering with your life, what usually happens to that friendship?
Mm.
We all know, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what's important, is we need to understand and accept that we've all been given a different deck of cards in life, but can we accept it? Can we move on and do what is best for ourselves in a sense, in letting go of the complaining, the playing the victim, and then we can actually, you know, move on with our life.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this a lot in India, right? Like you and I were talking about a chai wala the other day, and this gentleman who makes teas in Trivandrum in Kerala, he doesn't have any complaint, doesn't play the victim. He's actually stoked that he's getting 8 rupees now for a chai, where he was only getting 8 paise back 30 years ago,
yeah.
Right? So he has no complaint. If you mentioned that 8 rupee to someone, because if you know what 8 rupee is, that's...
65 rupees is $1.
So, yeah, do the math.
Maybe, could be more actually. Maybe 80 rupees.
Maybe 80 rupees, yeah. So do the math from there.
Cent.
Yeah. So, but he doesn't complain. And you were mentioning to me that because the Hindus have a connection to this order, this cultural tradition that is related to the eternal natural way of Sanatana Dharma and is related to Brahman, which is exactly the identical concept as Tao, they don't feel as though that they have anything lacking.
Mm.
in their life. He's getting his 8 rupees for a try and his 5 rupees for snacks. And he's stoked that he can provide a quality chai for the locals. And that's what you and I personally admire about places like India, because you don't see that in Korea or in Australia, for example, right? You don't – often people are complaining about their situation in life. Someone always wants more. We're always looking over the fence at what someone else has. Where in India, everyone's just like, this is my plight. Shiva has given me all of this. How good. And so if only we could apply that type of mentality all around the world.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a two significantly different way of making your own character, which is obviously one is from socialization and the other is following this traditional spiritual path. And this, through socialization is obviously education is a huge part of it. And all these media training goes into, and especially nowadays it starts very at a very young age because of social media.
Yeah.
And you're very, very widely exposed to that at a young age. And whereas the spiritual path is, it's not really a character making. You live as an avatar of God. With your example with the Chaiwala, he lived through God's grace without his persona, the ego. Yeah, so, and I think this through socialization, it only warps your true nature. It only warps your true vision of what real ultimate reality looks like. And it only makes us weak. Play victims and blame others and always have reasons for everything and whatnot, like to criticize other everything but yourself, and that kind of attitude cannot help anyone. And some reason that social conditioning is too overvalued, I think. And again, that way is you again in this chapter saying, Father, you go, less you know. That's exactly how it's Father, you go through the socialization process, you know nothing about your true nature.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you need to allow God's grace to take over your life and stop interfering with it. But you just got to let the interweaving with the true forces of nature.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned socialization and the farther you know, actually the less you really know about yourself and about the nature of the universe. And in the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu is mentioning this also in reference to Confucianism, which we need to remember because Taoism is a critique of Confucianism. So Lao Tzu was looking at the time in the Warring States period of China and he's going, wow, like these people are trying to learn so many things, but they've forgotten the Tao. And so if we relate that to our modern world, as you mentioned with socialization, when we go through this process of socialization, education, everything that we learn from the places that we're from, what are we doing? We're accumulating, right? So we're accumulating external information about who we supposedly are. And then we forget our innate goodness, we forget our innate connection to the Tao. And so what Lao Tzu is saying here in reference to going farther away and traveling and this and that is that if we subtract the accumulative knowledge that we've attached to ourselves, then we start to open our consciousness up to something much greater. And that's when the Tao can make use of you. Mm. It's the accumulative knowledge that we've experienced that blocks the river of the Tao to move through, to use you as an aperture for the universe to express itself. And so it's about understanding and recognizing this accumulative knowledge that you've acquired through your life, which is apparently who you are. It's not who you are. And so the spiritual quest and the Taoist path is about identifying those aspects of yourself and beginning the process of shedding, right? And so, but these may be deep, right? Mm. Because you've had this whole process that you've had to endure. We've all endured socialization from birth. This is who you are. This is what you believe. This is how you do it. And you're thinking, well, I don't know. I just follow, okay, just go go along with it. And look, there's certain aspects traditionally which are helpful in that sense, right? But the other aspects of socialization, you know, like all the things you accumulate, like you said, with education and these things, and trying to know too much become negative.
Yeah.
And so it's important for us to shed that. And as I was mentioning, it gets deep because you've had this constant feedback loop from people, society, and that telling you this is who you are. And so then you have these real entrenched, dormant vasanas, these habits and tendencies within yourself. It's a Sanskrit word that affect your samskaras on the subconscious level, mental impressions, subliminal imprints. And so we've all got this subconscious content that we didn't have when we were born, right? We were born, everyone was born innately good. That's the nature of Taoism. That's the nature of life. And if you don't believe that, then you've never spent any time with any children before in your life. So, and we were all once innately good. We still all are innately good, but we've got all this accumulative knowledge hanging around, and it's stored in our basement, in our subconscious. And so the Taoist path is about, we've got to start cleaning this basement out. We've got to clean the basement out, which affects our habits and tendencies, which then affects our actions, our karma in life, and our unconscious actions towards things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why we have to focus on the accumulative knowledge. And the way to do that is to follow the path of Wu Wei and stop reacting to each and every little thing that you see in life, right?
Yes.
This is the Sanskrit vairagya.
Yes.
Vairagya is dispassion towards worldliness and also non-reactiveness.
Mm.
And so that's what we have to do. We have to stop reacting. We have to let go that, hey, maybe my agenda for life and for other people is not actually a positive thing. It's something I've cooked up in my own mind as the result of the accumulative knowledge.
Mm.
It didn't come from the heart. It didn't come from your li. Because those things that come from our li, our organic pattern, are very effortless and natural. You know, someone might find music and it's very effortless for them. They have like an innate ability at it. You can't explain why, but that's the way it is.
Yes.
But then we cook these other things up in our mind where we think, maybe in a political perspective, like this is how other countries should do it. This is how my country should do it. This is how other people should think.
Mm.
And all you do is put a target on your back.
Yeah, I think the heavier the social conditioning is and the more you give your belief to that, is the heavier the vasanas and samskaras become. And it is going to be more and more difficult actually to break out of it. The shedding process can be a little bit more intense and maybe can take a bit longer. First of all, you need to be aware of that social conditioning, what that social conditioning does to all of us, right? And this similar concept was actually spoken in the Madhyamaka Buddhism as well. They kind of dissected the truth into two different concepts. The one is called Samvritti Satya, which means the conventional truth. So like conventional, this is a microphone, this is a, like,
yeah,
you know,
course, yeah.
You need to cook, you go and cook, I'm hungry, this kind of stuff. Whereas the other is a Paramattha Satya, which is absolute truth. Absolute truth is what we've been basically talking about, the way of the universe, the organic pattern of universe. And everything came from it, and everything will go back to it, the organic order of the universe. And the other thing is that prajna, which is the ability, being able to see this pattern of the universe, it's doubt, so that ability to acknowledging that the way of the nature, Tao. So once you have prajna, then you shall be able to see things as they are, because as they are, thus is the Tao.
Yeah, prajna is like that intuitive wisdom, isn't it?
Intuitive wisdom, yes.
It's something that you can sense about the pattern. And I like what you mentioned about the relative and the absolute truths, because often in this day and age, particularly with Westerners who are new to non-dualism and they get excited, you know, so they will say, oh, who is the one cooking and you know, who is... So, you know, it becomes more of a mind game, whereas if you understand relative and absolute truth, like you said, like this is a cup, this is a microphone, we all know this.
Yes.
These are just relative truths. And so you don't have to split the egg with this. You don't have to start making a philosophy about, why is the microphone a microphone, and who says it's a microphone.
Yeah, it is going through a bit, a bit nutty.
Because you're trying to apply the absolute truth onto the relative truths. That's the mistake a lot of new people to non-dualism make. That's why you see online when people are talking about non-duality, you'll see this non-dual police where people are in this very competitive and combative mindset, which is the indication that they are a victim of duality. Because first of all, if you were and you understood non-dualism, you wouldn't even be reacting. You'd be following Vairagya. You'd understand that this is the process for some other people, but not all people. You know, so some people have progressed on the path and they're more submerged in absolute truth, but they understand relative truth because you have to function as a human being. Otherwise, you would be a sadhu or a yogi where you would have a complete discard for the relative truth.
Right.
But as a human, you understand that of a human living in society, that there are relative truths that we don't need to debate about. We know pizza tastes good, for example. Maybe it doesn't taste good to some people, but let's say 99% of people think pizza tastes good.
Yes.
There's nothing to debate. I don't eat the pizza and say, who is the one that likes the taste of this pizza? Because then you're getting into sort of a schizophrenic split.
Too much.
And that's not natural, see? This is where Taoism comes in and kind of pulls the rug under from all of those people who become too philosophically oriented, where it says, if it's good, just enjoy. There's nothing to think about. Once you start making it all a head game, that's when we get into places like sin and things like that that aren't related to actually Eastern philosophy. And that's what some Westerners are doing to the great Eastern spiritual traditions, where they're overlaying this concept of right and wrong over the systems. And right and wrong shouldn't be even part of the systems because they are non-dual systems, right? Even in yoga, which is a dualistic system, you still have to get over the concept of right and wrong, good and bad, because these are systems that come from yogis, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstanding that in when we talk about truth, people don't seem to understand that there is actually a level of truth. That's what actually we need to understand that. That's why at a certain level this is the truth, so just leave it at that. And then there's the ultimate truth. And to be able to understand that ultimate truth, you may need to do a little bit more of a work. And so I remember one talk talking about the level of truth, like the color of the sky from where we sit is blue, but is it still blue when you change a position? Let's say you're in a spaceship. Is there a sky then? What's the sky looks like?
Sky's not blue.
Exactly. It's maybe just pitch dark. We don't know.
Yeah. It doesn't have a color, actually. Yes. So, and that's from the perspective of sage, right?
Yes.
The sage, but it's not that they discard that it's blue. It's like Tozan's quote, right? Where Tozan said, the great Zen master said, mountain is a mountain, sky is a sky. Then sky was the mountain was the sky. But then when everything reoriented itself, mountain was mountain, sky is sky.
Yes.
So once the sages had the realization, then there's the recognition that from a certain perspective, a certain vantage point, it's blue.
Right.
I understand the absolute truth. I know it's not blue. But I understand that level as well from the relative perspective because first and foremost, I'm still a human. I am not the ultimate Tao in its totality. They understand that they are the expression of that. They are one with Brahman. But they are also not ignorant that there is this relative perspective.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people new to non-dualism and the non-dualist schools of the East, people try to neglect that and say that that doesn't exist at all, it's not blue, and this and that. And there's a sense of arrogance to it. There's not a sense of humility. And that's why humility is a core aspect within Taoism and in the path in general, right? And so you always have to appreciate. So like when we talk about the truth, right? If you were to say the truth, okay, all is Brahman, all is Tao, and I am that. That's the ultimate truth. But when we say I am that, not I as a person, am that, you know, like aham brahmasmi, which is one of the great four Mahavakyas. It's I am Brahman, right?
I am Brahman.
But it's It should be translated in English, I am Brahman without the I.
Yeah.
Because the English complicates the Sanskrit.
Yes, yes.
And so people walk around, maybe the non-dualist police walk around going, I am Brahman. They, you know, very arrogantly make a statement that they are that, right? Or that they are enlightened. As soon as you say that you are enlightened, you are not enlightened, because no one can claim to be enlightened, because that means that the ego is claiming it. If you understand that you're enlightened.
I am Brahman with I.
Yeah, yeah, with I. Yeah, that's the new Mahabhakti, yeah.
For a new age.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's right. The Jivas just got it, claimed it and said, yes, that's it. I am Brahman. That's it. With I, this nonsense without the I doesn't exist. So that's what people need to recognize, right? Mm. Like, so this is where the subtlety of the Eastern spiritual traditions come in.
Yes.
So again, if you understand the ultimate truth, as you were saying, the truth, all is Brahman, all is Tao, and I am that without the I.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's magnificent. You know, that's the enlightened state. Mm. That's moksha. That's nirvana. That's the candle being blown out. But you still understand from a human perspective the relative truth. This is, again, the phrase in Zen Buddhism, you know, before enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. Mm. After enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. It means life goes on, but there's been a transformation, or not even a transformation, but a recognition of your ultimate nature. You've realized that this accumulative sense of self is just an actor.
Yes.
And you've exposed this actor in the play. You're looking at it and you're going, you're carrying on a little bit about certain situations and this and that don't really have any meaning to you. That
it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter in the end. And you're carrying on, you're emotional, you're angry, you're trying to get your point across to someone, and it's an actor.
Mm.
It doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't.
And so, guys, we hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.